welcome. My name is Julian Schlossberg, and the name of our show is Movie Talk. My guest today has acted in motion pictures and television on Broadway. She's been nominated for the Academy Award. She's won the Golden Globe Award. She's been nominated for 3 Tonys. She won a Primetime Emmy Award. Her name is Brenda Vaccaro. Welcome, Brenda, to Movie Talk.
Oh, thank you, darling. That's quite a beginning.
It's a great beginning, and we're going
to
start.
Glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you. We're going to start at the beginning. Even though you were born in Brooklyn, you're pretty well raised in Dallas, Texas.
Can you imagine?
Did you have an accent as a kid?
I don't think so. I can't really remember. I don't think so. I never said y'all. That's for sure.
No.
Y'all want to come?
Yeah, that's
right. I think I used to make fun of my girlfriends.
Oh, yes.
Really, you don't really mean that, do you, Brenda? They couldn't even say Brenda properly. Brenda. Yeah. They never heard that name before. Who gave you that name, honey? Brenda?
I wanted to ask you about the influences of your mom and dad as a child on you. What, if you're thinking about it, and I'm sure you do at times, what were their influences on you?
Well, first of all, they were so adorable together, and they were so in love that I grew up with two people that adored each other. I was sitting at the breakfast table once with my dad, and she was at the kitchen stove. And he turned to me once, and he said, tell your mother how beautiful she looks. And I said, I turned to the stove and I said, Mom, you really are beautiful today. And so she turned and she looked at me with this gorgeous look on her face. She said, did your father tell you to say that? And I will always remember that because that was two people in love. I mean, they adored each other.
It was wonderful
to grow up with that kind of love that they had, being in love and already having a daughter, you know, so they had spent some time together and they weren't ashamed to do it. And so I grew up knowing what love was really all about. And I appreciate that from the two of them for forever for that. Sometimes I would say, Mom, I want to tell you something. And I'd tell her. And there was something that I had a little bit of shame or I was like apprehensive about. She'd say, did you talk to your father about this? No. She said, why are you not willing to hear his wisdom? He has the most extraordinary wisdom. And I mean, I grew up with two great people and I never measured up to the two of them, but it's all right. I mean, you know, I was just a daughter.
Well, they must have been pretty damn excited about your career, which we're going to talk about, especially at a young age. What you did as a young kid, we'll get to it, but it's amazing. First question, where was the acting in your life? Did you always want to act?
Yes. The first school I went to was with the nuns in Dallas, Texas. They eventually had me leave. They told my father maybe I would be suited for another school. I was in a costume that I don't remember, but I think it was a duck. And it was a play that was being done by Ursuline Academy, and I was in it. And what I did that got me out of the play was the curtain was lowered, but it had, you know, two parts. And I parted the curtain and waved to the audience who went, hi.
Oh, wait a second.
Before the play even started, the nun pulled me by the costume and sent me home. And well, I mean, let's put it this way. I had extraordinary lessons to learn. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I can say this much. If we want to segue into something, you as a kid broke the fourth wall, and you did it again on Broadway. Let's jump to that.
And you begged me unknowingly. But anyway, I just loved performing. I thought it was one of the easiest things to do. And it gave me such pleasure to do it and to give it to people, you know, to see them laugh, to see them get it. You know, it was just something, I guess, I don't know. Sometimes you see people in the street playing one of their instruments and I think, oh, I know what that feels like.
Now, you're 17 years old.
Yeah.
You're going to come to New York City from Dallas alone to study with the great Sandy Meisner.
Let's
talk a little bit about Sandy Meisner. Let the audience know.
No one knows. That was the first year Sandy Meisner's left. He left. And he went to L.A. to teach at another school. They had given him a big job. Yeah. I had David Pressman, who was from Boston University, and cried at everything. He loved everything everybody did. Not much of a teacher, but a splendid member of the audience.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah.
He loved everything that everybody did almost. He was lovely. He was
well,
great.
You know, when you're acting, especially in film and television, if you have a director, and I'll tell you who did that all the time, was Mike Nichols. Nichols would, they'd have to stop, we'd have to stop shooting because he was laughing so hard.
Oh,
he ruined
great.
The take. He
but
ruined the take.
Great? Isn't that great?
Yeah, that
I think that's delicious. I love that news. You know who used to do that too? Abe Burrows.
Oh, yes, yes.
Oh, yeah, Abe would love it. That's funny. Keep it in. He would say that to you, did it. It was.
Well, let's talk about your very first play called Everybody Loves Opal, directed by Captain Hook himself, Cyril Richard. How did that come to pass? How did you get that?
With Eileen Eckers.
What an actress. What
an
actress.
She taught me everything that was worth knowing. I adored her. She laughed at everything I did. You got it, kid. You know what you're doing, kid. She was great. I just loved her. She was my teacher. She was like my mother. I just had the best time. And Stubby K.
And Jimmy Coco.
Oh, that's right. Can you imagine? Well, we all loved each other. That was one of the great experiences.
Yes. And in those days, which doesn't happen for many years, in those days, you tried out in Boston or New Haven, and you tried out in Boston, did not get great reviews.
Is that true? I don't remember.
Yeah. Eileen did. Eileen did. But
you should.
You guys came to New York City with a cast that's wonderful, and it just didn't work. And
guess what? Barbara Streisand was across the street doing, what was it?
Funny Girl.
No, the other one.
I Can Get It For You Wholesale.
They'll write, which I tried to audition for and didn't get. And we used to meet each other in the street after a Wednesday matinee, and there was a theater. There was a little Chinese restaurant in days, years ago. You could go down the stairs into this little Chinese restaurant. And we'd meet Wednesday after the show. We'd have bites to eat. And Elliot Gould would be late running across and sitting with us because he was in the show with her. And I mean, what were we, 18, 19?
I don't remember.
But anyway, we would eat and then she'd get up and she wore that long black skirt and that black out. And she'd run into her dressing room and I'd run into mine. We'd go to sleep. We'd get up and do the night show. And this was my life. I just wish I had it back because I had so much fun.
Well, not only that, but years later, she directs you in a movie, The Mirror Has Two Faces. So it's kind of like a nice little closure there. You're working together years later. Now, let's talk about the fact that's your first Broadway play. And despite the fact that it closes very quick, 21 performances, you win the Theater World Award. Incredible. At 22 years old.
Okay. What a gracious handshake that was to welcome me into the club. I know my mother went, she said, I'm really proud of you. She said, I think you've got a beginning here. She was so excited.
Now, let me ask you if you can remember this. It must have been devastating, though. You're a kid and the play's going to close in 3 weeks. Of course, it was the way a good entry for show business.
Right.
We know how you
get
whacked around.
Play with Mary and Seldes, And I was, I can't remember the name of the place she was in. It was so great. And I was coming up the stairs to go to my dressing room. She said, darling. And you remember Marion Seldes?
Sure. She's married to Garson.
Dramatic. She was so dramatic. I mean, even if you asked her what time.
Theatrical.
It was.
Theatrical.
Yeah. It's 7:30. I mean, it's really amazing. And as I was running up the stairs, she said, darling, darling, I'm so sorry. She said, you haven't heard the news. I said, no. She said, we've closed. I said, we just opened last night. Gene Hackman was in it with me. I can't remember the name of it. Forgive me, because it does matter. But, I mean, it was so funny. Marion was such a dramatic creature. I loved her. Darling, we've closed.
Well, I know you did a play called The Natural Look with Gene Hackman.
That was it.
That was it. Yeah, that's it. And you had some cast. You had Jerry Orbach. You had Doris Roberts.
Oh, my God.
This was some cast. And that did close. That one did close opening night.
Wasn't that a wonderful time, though, in the theater those days?
Oh, great. It was great.
I mean, plays that opened, you would leave going, oh, my life has changed. I never saw anything so beautiful. I mean, there was just such incredible, incredible work. I mean, I even saw Jason Robards on stage by himself doing what?
Huey, yeah.
You're so well-versed. You know everything.
Not everything, but almost.
Almost. I'm so impressed, Julian.
Thank you, Brenda. How about this? Jason Robards, Colleen Dewhurst, Ed Flanders, A Moon for the Misbegotten. It doesn't
Maureen
get
Stapleton.
Better. Oh, yeah, but she was with George in Plaza Suite.
I mean,
you're talking about
it was
the best time.
It was the best time.
It was. It really was. Well, let's talk in terms of your first movie. We said Marion Seldes. She was married at one time to Garson Kanin, your director of that first movie.
Right. Well, in Vegas.
You're at the Caesar's Palace.
I know it. How do you know all this?
I did my research.
You're excellent. I'm impressed.
Thank you. But I want to tell you that in that movie, I know David Janssen was the star, but in that movie was a man who was known to many people as a great comic, but he took acting very seriously, and that was Don Rickles.
Oh, right. And he was in Vegas at the time.
Yes.
He was in Vegas. What was he doing there, I wonder?
He was playing the loungers, honey.
That's it. Stand-up comedy, right.
That's right. And he was, I saw him at the Sahara. He was brilliant. I mean, brilliant.
And guess who was there at the same time? Warren Beatty. I used to see him in the elevator. We were both about the same age. And I would say, are you doing a movie? He said, yeah, you too? I said, yeah. He said, what do you think of this place? I said, I think it's pretty sparkly. I kind of like it, you know? He said, do you want to meet and have it? It was so great. We were like kids, teenagers. Those were the days. Oh, God, you're making me remember so much stuff.
Well, that's my plan.
I know. I guess so. Well, I'm certainly party to it.
Well, I'm very glad. So, okay, we talked about the first play that everyone loved, Opal. And we talked about, as we said, The Natural Look. But I do want to talk about another play. This is an easy one for you to remember.
Okay.
It was a giant hit, a play that you probably performed in for 3 years on Broadway. It's Cactus Flower, yes.
Lauren Bacall.
Let's talk about Lauren Bacall. By the way, in all the people in my career that I've met, and like you, I've met many, she was the toughest the toughest person. She would have knocked Bruce Lee out of the box.
I love why you picked Bruce Lee, because he was there in those days. Yeah. That was when he was at the top. What do you want me to say?
Let me first ask you this. First, you're working with the great Abe Burrows, a wonderful, wonderful talent.
Adored him.
And of course,
he knew I had comedy in me. He knew it. And he told me, do what you do. He said, don't ask me. Don't ask me nothing. He said, just do what you do, okay? That's why I hired you. That's why you won the part, you know?
Well, that's, you know, there are actors, and you may be one of them, that actually want the director to leave them alone. They just don't want to be talked to by the director. Some of them have to come eventually back and say, please, I'm having trouble with this. But there are actors, and I worked with a few. Alan Arkin, for example, a brilliant actor, did not want the director to give him notes, did not want notes. So
why was that? Did he say why?
I think he felt he knew what he had to do. He just knew what he wanted to do. And
it's
he
a little,
had his
bit, little too insular for me.
Well, I think
I am curious to know the director who chose me for my audition, where he believes I'm on the road to doing something proper and correct and funny.
That's right.
And that it fits the character that most likely with AB wrote it. You know, Neil Simon wrote it.
Right.
So if you made a mistake, both those guys were very clear about telling you. If you didn't know how to get there, once Neil Simon said to me, don't take a breath in between the first line and the last. He said, that's the laugh. I went, the breath? He said, no, no breath.
No breath. No breath. Well,
but
you
they
know,
teach you. They teach you about comedy. They teach you how to say lines that they wrote that they heard in their heads. And they want you to do it because they know you can.
That's right. Maureen, Brett, hello.
I wish I was Maureen Staples.
I
worshipped her. I loved her so much. Oh, my God.
Oh, she was a great actress. But you were very close with a lot of great actresses, Kim Stanley, Geraldine Page. These were icons in
mostly
the
Kim Stanley.
Yes.
She would say to me, if she saw me, she said, I didn't believe you in that scene. Oh, whoa. Yeah. Hold on. You know, I was like drooping. But they were the best teachers ever.
Oh,
and guardians. They were guardians of me.
Yeah. How
I was blessed. And I knew it. And my mother knew it. She said, Kim Stanley? She said, you ought to be on your knees thanking Kim Stanley watching you.
Well,
you know,
let me ask you,
Kim Stanley.
Did your mom have a similar voice to your wonderful, raspy, gorgeous voice?
Yeah.
She did.
And Anne Bancroft said, I know you're Italian. She said, because you've got a voice like me. Italian women have these voices. I said, is that true? You know, my mother had a great voice. She went up for an audition when she was 18 with a ukulele. You know what year that might have been? And he said, we're not hiring baritones today. We left the theater crying. You know, what is it? What would it have been, 1927? I mean, I don't know. She went into, she sang. I guess she had this low voice, you know, and she didn't get the part, folks.
Weren't they a bit nervous for you to go to New York at 17?
She wasn't. My father died, unfortunately.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Well, your dad was named Mario. He named the restaurant Mario's Restaurant. But you're not...
Actually, he graduated from NYU. He was a lawyer, but it was during the Depression. So his wife was pregnant. He met my mother. She was pregnant with a child. His mother was bedridden. And, I mean, he needed to stay in New York and get a job as a lawyer because he graduated with honors. You know, my name is Brenda Buell Vaccaro because Dean Munn Buell paid for him to get through college.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Anyway, poor guy. He couldn't get a job. And the guy that was his roommate, like, said to him as he sat in that building, you know, the skinny one.
The Flatiron building?
Yeah, his father built that. This guy was his roommate in college at NYU. And he said, Mario, I'm sorry. My father, I think, told me he waited 2 hours to see him after they graduated. He said, I don't have room to hire you. I'm sorry, I can't. So my father was at a loss. So Benny Messina from Texas called him. Some Italians moved out of New York, you know.
That's Benny a couple, one of them. A few, yeah.
He says, come on down here, Mario. I'll get you a job. Don't you worry about it. Well, we'll get you set up. Bring your family down. Well, my father really didn't have much of a choice, so he went by himself first, called my mother and said, pack up. We're going to be down here. I got a job as a cook in one of the restaurants. He became a chef. And when he died, I found all these barrels of books. And I looked through them. Things were underlined. He actually was a scholar. Huh. And he became a great chef. And he opened a restaurant called Mario's near the State Fair, Texas State Fair. So Nat King Cole would come after the job. You know, Jimmy Durante came. I sang with Jimmy Durante.
I got up
on a table and sang with him. No, I'm serious.
Wow.
Believe me when I said I love you.
Because you've been a liar all my life.
All the time. A dirty, stinking liar. Well, he turned to my father after it was over and he said, this kid's going to be in show business. My father went like this. He wanted me to go to college. He wanted me to be a scholar. You know?
So he probably wouldn't have been thrilled about you going to New York at 17.
Well, you know, he finally succumbed and he asked me, should I send you to New York so you can pick a school and you can visit each one of them? I said, yes. I stayed with my Aunt Marge, who was a bridal designer, who was his sister. And I went to all these different schools and I ended up loving the Neighborhood Playhouse, where Martha Graham was teaching dance. I mean, whoa. And I called him and he said, which one did you pick? And I said, I think the Neighborhood Playhouse is, that's for me. You know, I just knew. So he said, okay, come home and we'll figure it out. We'll do it. So he was on my side. He died that night. Are you ready? It's like out of a book.
Oh, my. Well,
they didn't have Eliquis in those days. So he had a coronary thrombosis. Oh. That's like you go like this. His hands were on the table. His head was back. But he blessed me. He blessed me.
And he took you to New York.
Yep, he did.
Everybody loved.
No, because he really wanted me to be a scholar. He said, how could you throw away 4 years of the last freedom you'll probably ever have? He meant college. He said, and nobody will take the knowledge that you gain from that. I said, because I don't want to go to college. That's a waste of time for me, Dad. He said, a waste of time? I said, yeah, I know where I'm going. Where are you going? See, I'm going to go to New York and be on Broadway. I think it was magic. I don't know. I still look back at it. At this age, I think, wow, that story.
Well, you know, there's an expression I'm sure you've heard.
Tell me.
The power of intention. You had the power of intention.
You bet.
There was no doubt about it. And that in itself is incredible. Tell me, because I loved Captain Hook, Cyril Richard. Tell me about him. You remember?
He was so English and adorable.
He was Australian.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
I thought he was English. He sounded English.
He had an English accent, I think.
He's the first director I ever worked with outside of the Neighborhood Playhouse. I thought he was jolly. I thought he was funny. And I thought he was enjoying every day of rehearsal. I never heard about him directing another thing. And I think that he loved the writer of Everybody Loves Opal.
Yes.
But I don't remember the writer. He was a jolly fellow. And he had written another play, too. I wonder who wrote that play. I wish, because he was charming. He was really nice.
Well, I'll tell you that Cyril did direct another play. He directed Gore Vidal's Visit to a Small Planet.
Oh, I think I remember that. Yes,
yeah.
Because I fancied him. I thought he was really a great chap. And I remembered working with him was joyful. There was never a nervous day, never. He was always laughing in the audience. He was a pleasure. He was a charm, wasn't he?
Oh, my God.
Why do you bring him up? Why do you bring him up?
Because the very first play I saw on Broadway was Peter Pan. And he was Captain Hook. He was so great as Captain Hook that I followed his career after that because he started working with Anthony Newley.
Jesus.
And that was your director on Summer Tree. All these things come together.
Oh, my God, you're so informed. I'm so impressed. Oh, my God, Julian. You're wonderful to talk to because you're like somebody that I knew my whole life, who knows my family.
Well,
I do it in 1962? You know.
Well, I will say this. you
how
and
informed
I,
when, you when, are. I'm so impressed.
Well,
that's
thank
great.
You, darling. Yeah, but when we first met at Lee Grant's home, we never stopped talking. We just talked and talked. So I'm this glad we can do it. I'm glad we're going to have a record of it this time.
This time. Oh, that's great. I'm joyous.
Now, how the hell do you end up on the cover of Life magazine? This is unbelievable what's happening to you, Brenda, at this point. You're a kid. You're
and
in
you know
Broadway.
That photographer came to all those ladies that's in the magazine. Remember the pictures?
Sure.
Of actresses that were different than glamorous actresses, right? They were really serious actresses. And so the article was not that complimentary. I mean, it wasn't glamorous.
It's a beautiful cover. It's a lovely cover.
I love the photographer. I thought he was very interesting. And if you remember the other picture with me with a cigarette.
Yes.
I love that picture.
Yes.
And I kept telling him, I think you're so interesting. Most photographers wouldn't take a picture with the cigarette. Yes, he said, why not? I said, I don't know. Except I like working with you because you asked me to do things that are kind of regular.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you think, Brenda, when you look back, were you very ambitious, would you say, as a young woman? You weren't.
I was just having fun. And it was what I was, you know what it was? I was meant to do it. And I just knew I was meant to do it. I lived with my Aunt Marge. Every day I got up, I got on that Third Avenue bus. I walked those few blocks to the neighbor playhouse when I got out of the bus. And I was like so happy that I was in a great school with great actors. I mean, look at the class, Elizabeth Ashley. I mean, I could go down that list. They were just phenomenal people. And it was there were great teachers there. Even the voice teacher was fabulous. I was blessed. And it was meant to be. And I knew it. Every time I took that Third Avenue bus and went up and got off at the street, which I don't remember now, I'd have to walk three blocks to get there. And I knew that where I was going, it was where I belonged.
Well, it's an amazing.
My father up in heaven could hear me say it. This was meant to be. And I knew it was meant to be.
Well, I have to say, I mean, you're 22 years old and you get on Broadway. You're 22 years old. You're doing Naked City, a huge television show. Amazing. And once again, when I connect the dots, Naked City was produced by Herbert B. Leonard.
I know.
Burt Leonard. He also did Route 66. He did Rin Tin Tin. And he did the movie directed you and Robert Mitchum in Going Home. Now, that must have been, he was also very little. He was a small man. I'd like to see how he handled Bob Mitchum. That must have been something.
He was actually, Mitchum was very polite with him. But the last day, he was like incredibly rude. I kind of looked at him. I was very disappointed in him. But he loved to drink, needless to say more.
Yes.
But the great thing about Mitchum is that I fell madly in love with him. How could you not?
Yes.
It was magical. And so one day he had me to come up. He had days off. And he had me come up to Connecticut where he was in this beautiful house. I don't know why. But anyway. And I said, I want you to meet Maureen Stapleton, and she's not far away from here. You want to go? And he said, yeah, let's drive. He drove me to Maureen Stapleton's house, and the two of them got along like two Irish drunks. I've never seen anything like it in my life. They stood outside, and I was asleep on the couch already, and I heard them singing songs. I mean, it was just one of the greatest nights of my life because I felt so proud I introduced the two of them. They found such pleasure in being with each other. It was great. I adored him. What can I say?
Yeah.
I would have been so happy if he'd left his wife.
Well,
he said he wouldn't do that. But
I got to know
the ground he walked on. He was wonderful to work with. Oh, my God. But what did you want to ask me? I'm sorry, honey. I got thinking about him.
Oh, I like it. No, I was going to say that I've gotten to know Dori Sherry, who had run RKO.
That's
and he had the three Roberts under contract. He had Robert Young, he had Robert Ryan, and Robert Mitchum.
Ryan and Mitchum were two of the most extraordinary men. I think Robert Ryan was a great actor, don't you think so?
I think he was terrific. And a wild, really, despite playing often terrible human beings, a kind, loving, liberal, a real liberal man. He and Widmark lived near each other in Connecticut. They lived there.
They all close. Went to Connecticut, didn't they?
A lot of them. Arthur Miller was up there, and they were a lot of them. They were all, and they hung out a lot together. Anyhow, Dory Sherry.
You know so much. I love it.
Dory Sherry said to me, with Mitchum, he really liked him, but he was nothing but trouble because he would get either drunk, but he also got high on pot. He loved pot.
So yes, he did.
In the days when no one...
And he had the greatest pot ever. When I was with him in the movie, some guy with a sombrero on, I'm not kidding, came up the stairs. You know those hotels that have stairs?
Yes, of course. Of course.
Into his room. I happened to be in his room running lines. And this huge bag of Michoacan.
Yes.
I never remember things like that. But he taught me to say Michoacan. Michoacan. A babe in arms, you know, learning everything he told me. I took a puff off that, and I mean, I was like,
you were gone.
Carry me to my room, you know, that was down two floors. But yeah, he loved to see, he loved his marijuana, and he loved his drink.
He did.
And boy, he would get on that set, and he was the most professional. He was wonderful to work with. At one time in the middle of a take, he said to me, "That's not the line." And I said, he said, "That's another scene." I went, "Really?" But he was sharp as a tack.
Yeah. You know? Oh, wow.
He knew everything that he was supposed to know. He was in front of that camera. You didn't fool him. I was so in love with him. I begged him to leave his wife. He wouldn't do it.
Well, you know, at that point in your life, I have a hunch most men would have been more than happy to go with you.
So, I don't know.
That's true. That's true.
I kind of remember begging on certain occasions.
Well, I certainly do as a single man. I go to groveling, in fact.
Oh, God, you sweetheart. But, you know, you work with somebody and there's an attachment that there's no way to explain it. Sometimes it's just a small attachment that serves just the purpose of the play. Yes. Other times it's like lifelong.
Yes.
And I would call Mitchum and say, "What do you think of Michael Douglas? What do you think I should do this? What about that?" I mean, he became my father, but not really. But
actually,
you know, his wisdom was meant everything to me, you know? And I love the way he loved some of the actresses he adored Deborah Carr, you know?
Yeah.
And he would talk about her all the time. It just was lovely to know him, that way. He was someone who would never let you in the door of him personally, but he did. Do you know what I mean? He would give you his heart.
He and her, Deborah, were so great, and heaven knows Mr. Allison. Oh,
I know.
What a wonderful film.
I think he was in love with Shirley MacLaine. Oh my God.
Yeah.
That was the big one.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think they got along well, though.
Oh, yes, they really?
Yeah,
well,
I don't think so.
She was at a party that Sandy Gowan was giving. And I watched her all night. I wanted to tell her what he had said to me once. And as she left the party, I dashed out of the outside little park we were in. That was Sandy's house. And I followed her through Sandy's bedroom and I said, "Shirley." And she stopped and she looked at me. She wasn't easy to talk to. So I said, "I just want you to know that Robert Mitchum adored you. And he said to me once, if he was going to leave his wife, he would have left her for you. I was hoping he'd leave her for me." And she looked, a kind of smile came on her face. And she looked at me, and I know she didn't expect any of this. You could see it in her face, you know. And thank you, kid. And she
Brenda, I want to ask you, because as I said, you have all this incredible thing happen as a young woman. Amazing. On Broadway, 22, Life magazine cover. Nobody prepares you for success. Nobody sits you down and says, this is how you handle it. Was it overwhelming? And if it wasn't, what helped you stay somewhat grounded?
Because there were a lot of friends who did warn me. There were a lot of people who did give me wisdom about it. And it just sort of sits inside of you like butter you don't put on your toast. But you know what I mean? It's like wisdom that stays in there. I don't know. I don't know. I'm sure I made mistakes, but I certainly saw when I was about to make one and often would be pulled back because of the wisdom that was given to me. I got a lot of wisdom from a lot of... Maureen Stapleton was the first one to tell me, never lose your temper with a director. You know, never. A conversation is something after rehearsal, don't you? You know. But I mean, there were just good things that I heard from people that I respected or that I got to work with. Jesus Christ, I worked with some of the best people ever, ever.
Oh, my God. Your list
of... I go down the list, it surprises me. But I learned from every single one of them. I mean,
What do you expect from a director? What will you... If you said, this is what I really want.
Patience. I love a director who's patient. Abe Burrows was patient. He would wake, you know, as he left the theater once, he said, hey, kid, for Cactus Larry, you did good. You said at least one of my lines. I think I spent the day up there like saying a line, not remembering and improvising. You know what I mean? I was doing improvising because I learned to do that at the neighborhood playhouse to find the truth in a scene.
Yes.
You know,
well, the
but
fact
to
say
that, line to me was the wisdom he gave me. You said at least one of my lines, you know.
Yes.
He was such a gentleman. And you know, somehow when you work with the greats, they give you wisdom that only people who adore you or love you and gave you a goddamn great job would do. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do.
Into their artistic heart. Said, I'm going to take care of this lady here. She's going to learn from me. You know, there was wisdom I got from Neil Simon, you know.
Yeah, but with Neil, you better say the lines.
Yeah.
You can't
Remember
mess
I
around.
Told you what he said to me? Yeah, don't you take a breath in between.
Yeah.
You
but
just that, lost
but, but he didn't want improvisation on anything. Every word had to be the
Absolutely.
Way he wanted it.
Yeah.
He was very strict on that.
Yes, he was. How do you know that? Did you know him?
I worked with him, yeah.
Oh, so I mean, you know him like I know him, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I didn't know him the way you know him, but I knew him well for other reasons, which are, I own Little Me. You remember the play Little Me with Sid Caesar? He played 7 different roles.
Jesus Christ. So, how did that guy do that? Wasn't he amazing?
What he was the most.
He was a
genius. Brenda,
the
very first movie I ever produced was 10 from your show of shows. So I worked
really?
With him. Yeah. And I worked with him. He was beyond brilliant, but not articulate.
Genius. He's
not
a genius.
Yeah, he couldn't. Very hard for him to just speak the way we're speaking.
Yeah.
Not obviously hard for us.
No. Couldn't have a conversation with him. He was not a conversationalist.
No, it's true. But
he's a genius, and each one of us, I bet you, was he not a genius? I mean, you kind of looked at him like that if you took the wrong step, forget the line, you know, that he knew it.
When you come across those kind of people, you're not only in awe, but knowledgeable and smart enough to know, I'm going to try to learn from them. I'm going to try to learn from them.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful that you were able to, with friends, handle that gigantic success that you had as a young woman, because it's unusual. It really is unusual. I don't know. I hope one day.
I'd love to take all that credit, but if you only knew all the mistakes I made.
Well, we
you
can
make
talk.
Mistakes along the way. I mean, you do.
Well, but
I wish I didn't. And if my father had been alive, I'm sure he would have gone. That's a mistake. You know what I mean?
Well, but we all make mistakes. And that's part of the question is, do you learn from the mistakes? Not just the making the mistakes. If you can learn from it, it's not so bad. Then it's all right. How did you handle rejection? You would go up for an audition, a role you perhaps wanted and didn't get. Were you able to go?
What about I could get it for you at wholesale? I sang the song for them. They gave it to Barbara. And well, they should. Nobody sang that song like she did. I don't know. You're asking me a question.
Well, I can say this much. You have a joie de vivre. You clearly see the glass half full, not half empty.
That's right.
I have a hunch.
I have a hunch
your mom and dad beginning, that great beginning that you had solidified your strength as a person and your power of intention, as we said. You wanted this, and you got it.
And one thing, too, Julian, with my mother and father, I saw true love. I saw what love was really supposed to be.
Yes.
And even if I indulged in things that I knew were not healthy and was not the answer, I always remembered, he said, tell mother how beautiful she looks.
Yes.
You know, I remember the moments between them, and I think, what am I doing here? Because of the example they set.
But we
go our way sometimes when we're young, no matter what.
Well, of course, we have to find our own way and make our own mistakes.
I made mistakes, let me tell.
Well, yes, but, you know, Robert Shaw, the wonderful actor who I got to know.
I adore him.
I know he did. He cared for you so, and he gave you some advice, which he didn't listen to, as you said.
That's right.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that in a minute. I just wanted to tell you.
But I adored him. Wasn't he wonderful Englishman? He was so.
Oh, great.
He was joyous. Even though he drank a lot, he was joyous.
Oh, boy. This is what happened. We went out for dinner.
Tell me.
And we ordered and whatever, and he's drinking. And he said, what are you going to drink? I said, I don't drink. He said, what do you mean? I said, I don't drink. He said, what? Why? Are you sick? I said, no. He said, oh, you're an AA. I said,
no,
I don't drink. I try to make him laugh by saying, I only drink egg creams. But he didn't know what an egg cream was.
That's right. No, he would not. He would
but
not.
But he couldn't, Brenda, he couldn't comprehend.
He couldn't fathom it.
He couldn't get it. Could not get it. But we did hit it off. He had just come back
and
from making.
And wasn't he wise?
Oh, and he was articulate. Whoa. And he wrote a lot of books, you know. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, he was.
I know he wrote one book. I didn't know he wrote a lot of books.
Wrote a lot of books. And
he was very intelligent, and he was very wise, and he could see who you were. He used to come to my trailer. Our trailers were, at Universal. He was doing a movie. I was doing a movie. He would come over and visit me and say, all right, tell me the trouble you got in today. He was adorable.
Yeah.
I loved him. I loved him dearly.
Yeah, I found it.
What are we talking about? You know what we're talking about? People that don't exist anymore.
But here's the great
now.
Brenda,
maybe I think to myself, Brenda, stop saying that.
No, wait, honey.
Meet them.
Wait. They do exist because they're within us. They're with us.
Yeah.
And that's
what I mean? I miss the quality.
Of
the quality, the class. I mean, to see Jason Robards on stage by himself doing that great playwright. What was,
Huey, the name, Huey is the name of the play.
Because he played this guy that drank, and the bartender's upstage, and he never says a word, hardly moves.
That's right.
And I thought, this is a guy that's so brave, and yet Lauren Bacall used to have to go to the White Horse to get him all the time.
Yeah.
White Horse, that place where everybody who drank would go.
And it was so, his drinking
but
was.
But I adored Jason because of his bravery. Even every single guy, Mitchum, all of them, I didn't care if they drank or not. On stage, they were perfect.
Yeah,
it's
true.
They were perfect in film. They were, all of a sudden they turned into the most, not turned into, that's wrong to say, they were the greatest people you could ever meet. artists. I should say artists.
You're right, Brenda. They were artists. And I want to thank you for appearing with me on Movie Talk. And I'll see you very soon. We'll do another show.
Thanks for joining us on Julian Schlossberg's Movie Talk. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.